Thank you. Well, with the small audience, it's easy to ask, how many of you have lived or worked in a climate where you only get 15 inches of rainfall or less? Okay. Then you know what it is to live like in a dry country. I'm a Colorado native, and I grew up with an irrigation shovel in my hand. But if you're from anywhere in the Great Plains, this quote by Thornthwaite, I think, kind of typifies that region. You know, we get rain once in a while, but then once in a while we have these long dry periods. The other thing that always has been a factor in the West is that since Mark Twain's days, we've been fighting over water, and there's going to be more water fights as we go into the future. The last 9 years, through most of the Western Great Plains and the Intermountain West, we have been in a drought. We finally broke it this year, but we went through a 9 year series of drought. These are just pictures every other year from the drought monitor that shows you that finally in 2009 we broke out of that. Now, in Nebraska, we're very lucky. As we look at the High Plains or the Ogallala Aquifer, we have about 70% of the exploitable water in the whole formation under the eight states in the High Plains formation. But we also have a large variability in our rainfall from east to west. I say we're semi-arid in the west, 375 millimeters, to corn belt conditions in southeast Nebraska that's very similar to all the rest of the corn belt. The thing that has happened because of that water resource is that in the last poll of the Irrigation Association about 2 months ago, we surpassed California as the number one irrigated state in the United States. We have a little over 8+ million acres. 1 million of that is surface irrigation, 7 million is from groundwater sources. And in our state, we have about 95,000 registered irrigation wells, and that's just a GPS referenced map of where all of those wells are. Well, what that has done since we started developing irrigation in the early 1970s has led to major groundwater declines from pre-development in many parts of our state. And we're seeing it in the west where we're drier, but we're even seeing it in central and eastern Nebraska where we have where we get plenty of rainfall. What that has led to through legislation is that currently we have moratoriums on the further development of irrigated agriculture in the state of Nebraska. Essentially, 80% of the state is under moratoriums right now for any further development of surface irrigation water resources or adding any additional land from existing sources. We have the same thing for groundwater sources. And in those areas that are in the blue, they are considered to be what's called over-appropriated. We are instituting controls of ground actual pumping limitations, and those kind of continue to keep coming down. So this isn't a new problem. We realized this. I started out at the University of Nebraska at North Platte in 1975. By the late 70s, we realized that the level of irrigation development that we had, we were going to cause some depletion. So we started working on some limited irrigation back in the early 1980s. We had a dry land block, what we called a limited irrigated block at 6 inches or 150 millimeters, and a fully irrigated block that included corn, wheat, sorghum, and soybeans. The principles for the irrigation, the limited irrigation, really came from two general areas of research that were going on in the mid-1970s. The first was all of the no-till work in dryland agriculture, the use of herbicides, maintaining residues, no-till. And the second was there was a whole body of research going on that started in the mid-1970s about drought conditioning, stress conditioning, and irrigation water timing with limited amounts of water. We put those together, basically looking at no-till systems to maintain residue, control weeds, capture snow, plant our crops no-till. What we learned from the irrigation timing research was that if you were going to stress a crop like corn, that you'd better do it early. It could take that stress in the vegetative period, but once you got to the reproductive period, that's where you needed to put on your limited amount of water. because that was the point where you had the greatest impact on yields. That was similar for wheat, sorghum, and corn. Just as an idea, as I said, this data is getting old now, but that gives you some idea of the level of yields that we were able to attain. We ran this experiment for 10 years. And our thing to note is that with our limited irrigation level of 150 millimeters for wheat over the 10-year period, that produced our maximum yield compared to a full irrigation. Soybeans was about 92%, and for corn, depending upon the crop rotation, we were at about 80% with that limited amount of water at North Platte. So about 5 years ago, I moved from, you know, the banana belt of a 20-inch rainfall zone at North Platte west to Scott's Bluff, where the annual precip is 15 to 15 and a half inches, and wanted to see how well these crop rotations would work there. And so started looking at a rotation of winter wheat, dry beans, spring canola, and maize or corn. The water levels that we used for the crops that used less water were 1, 2, and 300 millimeters. And for maize, 125 millimeter increments up to 375. And the highest water level was designed so it would be approximating non-ET limited conditions. So we thought we would top out for that based on what we knew at the time. The panhandle and my home country around Greeley, Fort Collins, Colorado is very similar. If you go out there, you will see more moldboard plowing than you see in most of the rest of the country. That is because that the irrigation practices drive the tillage. And in the areas of surface irrigation, like along the Front Range and up in the North Platte Valley, we're still about 70% surface irrigated. About 30% of the land is sprinkler irrigated. And so what that has led to or maintained, we still have about 65% of our ground that's in what I call true conventional old tillage. We are having a conversion, though, about 25% of our land area in the River Valley in the North Platte region is strip till, and there's probably less than 10% of the irrigated land that could be considered true no-till. So we still have a ways to go. The experiment that I'll talk about today, the objective is to determine the yield potential of no-till limited irrigated maize, wheat, dry beans, and canola. Be looking at some irrigation production functions, and then ultimately we want to use this data for economic scenarios for different water allocations. A few things about our soil and regional characteristics. At Scott's Bluff, we're on a trip fine sandy loam. Like many western soils, it's high in pH, low in organic matter. Rooting depth is 1.2 to 1.5 meters as opposed to say 1.8 meters in some of our good silt loam soils in central Nebraska. Water holding capacity fairly low. The other thing in most of the what we call the high plains region, we're at high elevation, 1200 meters, 4000 feet. You see the precip, got a real long growing season of 130 frost-free days, you know, compared to 160 or 170 in eastern Nebraska. That affects what we can grow. The plots in the experiment are under a linear move sprinkler system. The plots are 12 meters by 20 meters long. We're using standard no-till practices, just modifying, you know, existing planters. Our fertilization is based on soil test and anticipated yields. Now, when we started this work, we had a pretty good idea that we could transfer our information from North Platte to Scott's Bluff in terms of what we knew about irrigation timing for the wheat and the corn. The thing was, canola and dry beans were kind of an unknown. We just started growing canola about 1 year before the initiation of this experiment in 2005. We'd grown dry beans a long time, but really not under limited irrigation. Culturally, what we have done, based on some other work that I won't present today, but We did not change our seeding rates for wheat, for dry beans, or canola based on the different water levels. But based on our research from North Platte, we adjust our corn populations downward as we step down in water levels. Because if you plant too much population on corn at the lower water levels, you use it all up in vegetative growth, there's no water left to produce grain. So what it turns out roughly is that our lowest water levels, we're planting about half the population at the high, and for our medium water level, we're about three quarters of the population for full irrigation. The other thing, if you're familiar with dry edible bean production, you say, how do you keep that no-till? Because generally, there's a lot of tillage. When you harvest the beans, they are undercut, they're windrowed, and they're combined. To keep a true no-till system, we needed to develop a direct harvest system for dry beans, and a lot of that work was just starting in about 2005 when we initiated this experiment. So that presented some challenges. But since then, there have been some improvements in field preparation and also in combine headers to make that much easier, and we do have some farmers doing that now. Okay, all the data that I will present, I'm not going to have you look at a whole bunch of tables and try to figure out where all the numbers are. But we have the three water levels over here. I've included a zero that's a reference of some dry land plots that we have there, so you get an idea of how dry our dry land could be. So this is just our corn yields, and we've got an average. Because we didn't have all the crops starting in 2005, the data I'll be presenting is an average of 06, 07, and 08, which were very dry years. Our normal precip, I'll go English units, is 15 and a half. This year we had 12. This year we had 7. This year we had 13. So it gives you an idea. What I'll be doing with the data is essentially taking this tabular data and developing production functions and putting it on a relative basis, with our highest yield being 100%, and showing you the different crops and the different years. So here's corn in 06, 07, and 08. 06 was a little better, and what you see in a year where you have a little more rainfall, you approximate a curvilinear, but in the very dry years, those irrigation production functions are almost linear. So in not, you can fit a quadratic to that. It's not quite linear, but it's approaching. And 11.2 megagrams is a good yield for the Panhandle. A full season hybrid there is 100-day relative maturity. So you don't have the heat units, you don't have the growing season. We'll hit 12 and a half megagrams once in a while, but not too often. This is better than the county average. As we look at winter wheat is more drought tolerant, so you get a year with a little more precip, like 2006. Pretty good dry land yield with nothing. Good curvilinear response, and in that year, 200 millimeters would do fairly well. The one thing we are able to do in the High Plains region is we can grow good irrigated wheat. 6 megagrams that's over 100 bushels an acre. The further east you go, because you're lower in elevation, you don't have the filling period, those yield potentials are not as high. So we can grow good irrigated wheat if we don't have disease. Dry beans, again, dry beans are supposed to be a crop that doesn't require much water, but when it's really dry, like in 2007, you essentially get a linear production function even for dry beans, producing about 2.4 megagrams per hectare. Canola has been interesting. Canola follows dry beans, so we have pretty good soil moisture at the beginning, and we're seeing some good responses to canola, and it seems to be fairly water efficient, and we're producing some very good yields, 3 megagrams per hectare of spring canola. If we look at all the crops together, that canola line comes out on top, and with 200 millimeters, we're doing pretty well with canola. Corn requires the most water. It's on the bottom, and the other two crops are kind of intermediate in between. So in summary, what we have found is that we are making no-till work well on a sandy soil and a low rainfall area. If we do not have disease problems, we can grow very high irrigated wheat yields. That was not the case in 2009 when we had 6 inches of rain in June and we had black point and sooty mold that reduced our yields 30%. What we found is that our corn yields are above average compared to conventional yields in the panhandle. Our dry beans, however, in no-till aren't quite approaching those of what we're getting under conventional tillage. Dry beans have a lousy rooting system and they seem to do much better. I can produce 3 megagrams of dry beans in a strip-till system, whereas about the best I've done here is about 2.5 in my no-till. Spring canola we're finding is a good fit for the panhandle, and if we ever are going to play in the biodiesel game, we can grow a whopping 35 bushels of soybeans per acre year after year in the panhandle, but we can grow 3,000 pounds of canola that produces 2 times to 2.5 times as much oil per acre as soybeans would. So that's why we're interested in canola. Producing good yields with 250 millimeters of irrigation, whereas we're putting on 375 for maize. And what we have found that we can maintain economic yields of lower water use crops near 2 to 250 millimeters. With average precip near 300 for maize, but we do have to adjust those inputs accordingly for newer, lower yield levels. And with that, I'll see if there's any questions.
There any questions for Ruth?
Yes. Question was, are we adjusting our fertilizer rates? Once we had some initial data and we had some guesstimates of what our yield levels were, we adjust our nitrogen rates accordingly. Phosphorus, we don't adjust according to yield levels, so we just kind of base that on soil tests.